My name is Mike Rickey. I'm the head football coach at Garner Valley High School, where I've been the head football coach since 1986. During my time here, I've also been the head baseball coach, assistant basketball coach, swim team coach, and involved in the school in a lot of other different capacities. I've also coached at Widener University and am very actively involved in the youth program, the local youth program, and the Burke Bell Youth League here in Delaware and Chester County. What I'm going to talk to you today is about getting parents on your side, or more importantly, things that I found over the last 20 years that have enabled me to get parents to be involved in our program in a very positive way. Parents generally want to be involved with what you're doing, and what I thought, instead of fighting the parents like a lot of people seem to do, I would try and get them and embrace them and bring them into the program in a way that they could feel like they were helping out, but at the same time not crossing that line and getting involved in places where they didn't need to be. These are very simple principles. They can be applied to any sport in any situation, youth league, middle school, high school, even collegiately. And what I found in doing these kinds of things is that it's made my life a lot easier, but more importantly, it's been better for the kids who have been involved in the program. Now, I'm certainly not going to give you the impression that I have every parent who's gone through Garner Valley who's a big supporter of me and of our program. That's not true, and I don't know if that's true in any situation. But what I try and do is put them in a position where they can't help but to support our program, whether they agree with me or disagree with what we're trying to do on the field. So what I want to do today is take you through a few of those things and explain what I've developed over the last 20 years and how it's worked for me here at Garner Valley. The most important factors that I found in getting parents on your side, first is communication. Second is showing that you care. The third is education. And the fourth is honesty. If you can incorporate those four things into what you're doing, and the chances of having the parents embrace your program, support you, tremendously increases. The first thing I want to talk about is communication, because it's absolutely vital that you communicate. One of the biggest mistakes that I see young coaches, young teachers, youth league coaches make is that they don't talk to the parents. We have here a mandatory parent, players, coaches meeting on the very first day of practice. I want to make sure that from that first day forward, I'm getting my message out there to the parents, what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it. At that mandatory parents meeting, what I do is start with explaining what my philosophy is. And the first thing I tell them from the first thing, I say, look, what I'm trying to do here at Garner Valley, I want to support your son. I want to support you. I see my role as being here to work with you to see how we can help your son be successful, not just as a football player. That's really last on my priority list. As a person, as a student, and then as a football player. I tell the parents, I see us as being on the same side, and that side is working together to help their son be successful. So what I do is at this meeting, I start off that way, and the first thing I talk about with the football program is that everything we do is designed around team building. Now, I'm a firm believer that we have no individual, we have no superstars. We treat everybody on our team exactly the same, whether you're All-State. Last year we had a kid, John Murray's first team All-State. He's going to University of New Hampshire on a full ride. I want to treat John Murray the same way I treat a first-year freshman who's never played football before. They're all part of the team, and the success of the team depends on the happiness, the effort, and the working together of everybody on that team. I always use as an analogy, in a football game, somebody jumps off sides. They don't just move that player back. Everybody goes back. And we try and develop everything we do with our football program around that. One of the things that we do, we don't have detention. I very rarely have kids that have detention during football season. And what I try and do is create some positive peer pressure with that. If a kid gets detention during football season, I run them all. I run every kid. I run the senior, everybody. Everybody goes out there. Because if that one player's not at practice, he's not getting the things that he needs to get, the team can't be as good as it possibly can be. I'm going to get into later about a philosophy I talk about with the players. But everything is developed around team. Second thing that I talk about, or third thing at this meeting, after philosophy and team, is expectations. And I want the parents to know what my expectations are. And I'm going to tell them right off the bat, once the players have mastered a skill, and once they show me and they show the other coaches that they can do it, I'm going to expect it to be done perfectly every time. Now, realistically, I know that can't happen. Nobody can be perfect. But the expectation has to be for perfection, because if it's not, if we set the bar way up here and they fall a little bit short, they're still going to be pretty good. If we set the bar at mediocrity and we accept things that are mediocre, we're going to be less than mediocre, and that's not where we want to be. So we set the bar with high expectations, not only for players, but also for coaches. And I make that very clear. I have expectations of the coaches and what I expect from the coaches. And I go over that with them as well. Next thing I talk about is finger pointing and making excuses. We don't do that. I don't let the coaches do it. I don't let the players do it. I don't do it. And I ask the parents not to do it as well. We have very strict policy here. I will not tolerate any player, any coach, questioning an official's call, judging an official's call, arguing with an official's call, pointing a finger at a teammate. We don't do that, ever. To me, that's just making an excuse. It's something that we can't control. I don't believe there's an official alive who would ever make a call purposefully against another team, especially in a high school level. I just don't think somebody would do that. So to me, it's a waste of time to spend time arguing, complaining about those kinds of things. What I want our kids to do, what I want our coaches to do, is focus on what can I do to make this situation better? What could I have done today that's going to make our team better? And when I can get all the kids doing that, and get all the coaches doing that, and get all the parents doing that, and together we do that, we're going to have a real good football team. That ties in with sportsmanship, the next thing I talk about at this meeting. What I do here when I talk about sportsmanship is I explain how, when I go to scout different games, how bad it looks when there are parents who are up in the stands screaming, berating officials, berating kids, berating coaches. It's really bad. It really looks bad and it sounds bad. And I think a lot of times the parents get caught up in wanting to be supportive and wanting to do a good thing, and they get a little bit overzealous. And it's really embarrassing. And I always say, I hope our parents aren't going to exhibit that same kind of behavior. And I try and get them to buy into the sportsmanship that we practice with the team. Like I said, we don't ever question officials' calls. One of the things I tell our players, and I probably say this every day during the course of the year, when you choose to play football at Garnet Valley, you're not just Joe Smith anymore. By choosing to play football, you now become a member of the Garnet Valley football team. So instead of just being Joe Smith, you're now Joe Smith football player at Garnet Valley. And when you're Joe Smith football player at Garnet Valley, you represent not only yourself, but your teammates, your coaches, your school, and you always represent your family. And I expect them to take that seriously. When I talk to the parents about that, I tell them the same thing. I want the kids to represent themselves as players, as people. I want them to represent their teammates, their coaches, their school, their families with pride in class, because that's the way we expect them to be, and that's what we expect them to do. By communicating that message out there to the parents, it makes it a heck of a lot easier for everybody to be on the same page. Next thing I talk about in football, particularly, it seems inevitable that there's going to be some yelling that's done on the field. What I want to make sure that I emphasize to the parents here and make sure that we as coaches do, we never yell at a kid because we don't like him. That's silly. We would never do that. If we're yelling at a kid at practice, if you come as a parent to practice and you watch practice and you see coach yelling at a player, it's not because we don't like him. It's because he's not hustling, or because he's not putting forth effort, or because he doesn't know what he's doing, and he's already shown us that he should know what he's doing. And that's the only reason, period. There will never be another. We don't yell at a kid because he drops a pass, because he makes a physical error, generally a mental mistake, something that he knows, or not putting forth effort. And we need everybody back to the expectation to do everything as well and as fast as they can. Next big thing is safety. We want to ensure that the players have a safe experience. So at this parents' meeting, I talk about that. And one of the key things for safety is that the kids need to be at practice. If a kid missing practice consistently, he's not getting the proper techniques that he needs to learn how to tackle properly or how to block properly. And we don't want that to happen. We want to make sure that his fundamental skills are developed on a consistent basis. The worst thing that a kid can do on a football field is be forced to stop and think. We want him to be reactive, not standing there passively when things are happening. And in order to be reactive, he needs to be at practice. He needs to know what's going on. He needs to know what he's doing on offense or in defense or in special teams, whatever he's doing, so that he doesn't have that hesitancy. That's when kids get hurt. The way he learns that is by being in practice. Also, by being in practice, he gets the proper conditioning that he needs. We need to be in condition physically, mentally, to play football. It's a tough game. And when I was coaching baseball, same thing. You need to be there so that we can keep things safe. The next thing at the parent meeting I go over is practice. And here, real vital communication. Parents, they like to know what's going on, when it's going to happen, no surprises. I give them a layout for our practice schedule for the whole year. I pay particular attention to the first couple weeks during preseason, how long practice is. We practice for 2 hours exactly, or 2 hours and 10 minutes now. Where they need to be. We have meetings in our first week of practice. We have 2 days. We practice from 9 to 11, 10 in the morning, and 5 to 7, 10 at night. But we have meetings at 8:25 and at 4:25. So they don't need to, a lot of times, the young guys, they'll show up the first day at 9 o'clock, and I don't want them there at 9 o'clock. I want them there at 8 o'clock so that they can be prepared for the meeting at 8:25. I want to make sure the parents are aware of this so there's no surprises, no curveballs, no appointments scheduled during that time. Hey, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it this way. This is when we need you to be there. When we do that, it really helps. The other thing that's really critical, and I always tell them this, we always finish on time. We don't have any surprise endings. If we're going to get done practice at 11:10, we get done practice at 11:10. That way they can set up a schedule, drive kids, pick kids up, whatever they have to do. And they know the routine. And the kids know the routine. And that's really critical to our success. During the school year, our school day ends at 2:32. We don't start practice until 3:30. That way, if a player needs to see a teacher, he has time. If he needs to get taped, he has time. And I emphasize during this part, academics always come first with our program. The kids are here to go to school first, and they need to take care of their academics first. And I want to put them in a position where they can take care of their academics. Now, if a kid's being lazy and he's just not doing what he's supposed to do and putting things off, then I have a problem with that. If a kid's struggling, he doesn't understand something, we give him all the time in the world he needs to do that. I keep a pretty close eye on what's happening with the teachers. I have the kids report to me what's going on in the classroom as well. Also, practice. We have water available throughout practice. Kids can get water at any time during our practice that they need. I have managers that walk around and bring water to the different individual groups that we're in. Practice, of course, also is altered based on weather, so the kids need to bring sneakers with them. But these kinds of things, you want to communicate the logistics of when, where, how, what they need. So the parents know that, players know that. It's not something that comes up later. Oh, I didn't know we needed to do that, coach. We want to make sure we take care of that right off the bat. Probably with high school football, this is the biggest issue that a lot of coaches, and I see this on youth leagues, I see it on the collegiate level, I see it in middle school, I see it on every sport and every level, just about, even in the pros, playing time. What I do at this meeting, and everybody listens during this time because everybody wants their kid to play, I tell them that I would absolutely, positively love to play every kid in every game, but the reality is I can't do that. Now, what we do in our football program, and when I was the head baseball coach, we did the same thing. Every kid in the middle school team plays in every game. Every kid on the ninth grade team plays in every game. Every kid in the JV team plays in every game. The only way they don't play is if they miss practice, if they don't know what they're doing, or, and this is big in football, if they're afraid. If one of those factors comes into play, then I fully expect the middle school coach or the ninth grade coach or the JV coach to talk with that player, to talk with that parent, so that they know when they come to that game, chances are Johnny's not going to play, and an explanation as to why. Other than that, if the kid comes to practice, I don't care how good he is, and I always tell the parents right off the bat, I don't care how good your kid is. I don't care if he's the best player on the team, if he's far from the best player on the team. What we want him to do is become the best person, student, and football player he can be, and that's going to be different for every kid. So if they come to practice and they know what they're doing and they're not afraid, then they play in all the JV games. And I always get questions, Coach, how can your JV team? Last year our JV team was 10-1. Every kid played every game. And not just a couple plays. They played significant time. You don't have to substitute. A lot of times coaches will put all their best kids in and then put their second. We don't do it that way. We substitute kids in different spots throughout the game. Maybe we'll put our three best linemen on one side and our three real young kids on the other side. Or we just mix it up so that the kids get in the game. But I want every kid to feel like he's a critical part of the team. He's an important member of the team. I've seen so many times where kids, when they played youth league or they played middle school or they played freshman or JV, their bodies were ahead of them and they didn't develop their coordination, and then they got to be a junior or senior and, whoa, look at them, and they were turned off to football because they never had the opportunity to play. And I don't ever want to do that. We're here to develop kids. So I'm really big on that. So I go through that, and then I say, now, as far as the varsity goes, and I tell the parents this, and I mean this sincerely, and one of the things I think you have to be with parents is sincere. I tell the parents at that meeting, and I tell the kids throughout the course of the year, you can call me anytime you want, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. If you're having a problem academically, if you're having a problem socially, if you're having a problem with your family, whatever you need, if I can help you, I can't always help you, but I'll try. Whatever I can do to help, I will be there to help you, and I don't care when you call me or what you call me about. But don't ever call me about playing time. Don't. If your kid's not playing, it's because he's not good enough, period. He doesn't know what he's doing. Maybe he doesn't have the right attitude. But generally, it's because he's not good enough. The players ahead of him are better. In my 20 years of being the head coach here at Garden Valley, I've never had a player who didn't understand why he wasn't playing. I've had several parents, but what I ask the parents to do, if your son is not happy about his playing time, have him come and see me. I'll sit down. I'm not going to scream and holler at him. We'll sit down. We'll have a very civil conversation. I'll listen to what he has to say. And then I'll tell him exactly why he's not playing. He may not like what I hear, but it'll be the truth. If we can't resolve that, and that has never happened during my 20 years where we've been honest and communicating, then I will have the parents come in with the player and we'll sit down together. Bring the position coach in, bring the player in, bring the parents in, and we'll sit down and have that conversation. But like I said, because I think we communicate throughout the course of the year, because the position coaches meet with their players every day after practice just for a couple minutes, and the emphasis on communication, we don't have that problem. And hopefully we're never going to. One of the things I ask too, don't use this cop-out. A lot of times parents will use the cop-out, oh, if I say something to the coach, he's going to hold it against my son. To me, that's ridiculous. Nobody who's doing this because they want to help kids would ever do something like that. So don't use that cop-out. Send your son to see me if he's not sure why he's not playing. He'll get an honest answer. He's not going to be, you can't hide. Football, you can't hide in sports. That's one of the beauty of sports. And we go over that very consistently. The next thing, a lot of times, and I'm going to talk about individual meetings when I have, a lot of times the player's perception of playing time and the parent's perception of playing time is vastly different. And when I get to my individual meetings, we'll talk about how I address that during the off season as another way to eliminate some of the problems that parents have with playing time. The next thing at this meeting, and this meeting generally lasts a half hour, 45 minutes. I'm kind of giving you the rushed version right now. At the end of the DVD, there's a copy of the format, the agenda that I use to go over this. Parent role, you know, the parents always want to know, what's my role? What can I do? As far as being the parent of a football player, what I ask them to do is be supportive of the players, of their son, of the coaches, of our football program, to make sure that he eats right, that he drinks plenty of liquids, fluids, water especially, that he gets enough sleep, that he ices his injury and reports him to the trainer so that we know what's happening and we can get the best care possible for him. Most importantly, though, is to communicate. I give him my home number. I give him my cell number. I give him my email. So if there's a problem, if there's something that's happening, I can't fix something that I don't know anything about. And what happens in bad situations is the parents don't communicate it. They let it fester, and it festers, and it blows up, and it causes all kinds of anguish for the player, causes anguish for the parents, and eventually causes anguish for the coach. We can eliminate that kind of stuff if we just communicate. Again, back to the same page. We're here to help the kid be successful. What can we do to help the kid be successful? Let's communicate and make sure that everybody's thinking the same way. Our booster club. Our booster club is called the Fifth Quarter Club here at Garden Valley. It's an outstanding group of people. Their role, and I want to make sure I explain this, you know, year after year, again, I've been doing this for a long time, I have parents who I have to re-educate as to what the booster club is. The purpose of the booster club is to raise money to benefit the football program. Not to benefit anybody's individual kid, but to benefit the football program, to purchase things that the school district can't afford, to purchase things that we need to be a successful football program. During the course of the season, our booster club meets once a week and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But the purpose is, this is a great way to get the parents involved in a way, in a positive, constructive way, where they can be helpful without meddling in things that they don't need to meddle in. And that's because the coach needs to give direction to the parents. Hey, we're here to raise money for the program. One time I had a mom stand up at a booster club meeting because all the parents weren't getting involved. Well, we should just give the kids whose parents come to these meetings every week, those are the kids that should benefit. And again, education had to come into place. No, that's not what we do. Okay, not every parent is able to come to the booster club because of job commitments, because of family commitments. The parents who can come, and we generally get a good turnout, we'll probably have 50 people at our booster club meetings. Those people, they need to be constantly educated. They need to be constantly patted on the back, telling them they're doing a great job. And if you provide them with the opportunity to do a great job, they'll do that. So on that first night, I try and get the parents to want to become part of our booster club, to give them things to do during our booster club. Next thing I talk about is our football camp, which is something special we have at Garnet Valley. We have a live-in camp for the week, and I explain the history and the tradition of that. And finally, the last thing I do is I let them ask any questions. That's what I do that first night at our mandatory parent-player coaches meeting. I find it's one of the most important things that we do during the course of the year. I want the parents to walk out of there thinking, man, this football program is here to help my son. They want to help my son as a person, as a student, and as a football player. You know, I tell them right up front, I'm not perfect. I'm never going to claim to be perfect. I'm going to make mistakes. But the mistakes I make aren't going to be because I'm not trying. They're going to be mistakes that I make, and I'm always big on, hey, I screwed up. I apologize. This is what I was thinking. I won't do it that way again next time. But I want them walking away thinking, man, I'm glad my son is part of this football program. If I ever have a problem with Coach Ricky or with any of the coaches, there's a way for me to get in touch with him and to communicate that. More importantly, the onus of responsibility goes on the player to deal with what he has to deal with. If he has a problem with playing time, he needs to be where he's supposed to be. They know where they have to be, when they have to be there, what they need when they get there. Communication, I find, is key. The next thing is the booster club meeting. I talked a little bit about booster club meeting. One of the key things that I found, I just told a friend of mine who used to be one of my assistants, who's now the head coach at another high school, he had a real problem with the parents the first year. He didn't go to one booster club meeting, which I thought was a critical mistake on his part. By not being at the booster club meeting, the parents, they have no directions, no guidance. As the coach, you're the one who knows what the program needs. You're the one that's building the program. You're the one whose name is in the paper. You're the one that needs to guide these parents in a positive direction so that they can help the program and not set out on a witch hunt against somebody else. It's a great way to communicate with the parents during the course of the year, and to me, you're very foolish if you don't take advantage of that. So my first rule with booster club meetings is to attend them all. My second rule is it's a booster club to promote the team. I don't come into the booster club and say, Joe Smith had this many yards passing and he had this many yards rushing. I don't do that. I don't talk about, I talk about the team in general and the things that the team did well. I always give an injury report, who's hurt, so people, because people want to know. And I want them to know, hey, after a game on Friday night, we come in on Saturday morning, we check things out. I call it home Saturday night. I call it home on Sunday. How you feeling? How's it look today? Is it swollen? Did you get some ice on there? Only takes me a couple minutes to make those calls. Really important. When they come to the booster club meeting on Tuesday night, I can follow up. You know, he looked pretty good at practice today. How's he been at home? I want them to know that we care, again, about them as people, not just as products of our football program. Like I said, I give the team status. I give positive things that we did during the week. I give things that we need to work on. This is a great way at the booster club meeting to communicate not only with the parents who are there, but the parents who are there are going to take your message out to other parents. So I always make sure that I say things at that booster club meeting. If there's a change in the schedule, if there's an upcoming event, a fundraiser, whatever it is that we happen to have, I make sure I communicate that at the booster club. I make sure I explain why we need things that we need. One of the things that we want to purchase this year is an end zone camera. So at the booster club meeting, I go over at the booster club why we need the end zone camera, how we're going to use the end zone camera, why it costs several thousand dollars, why that would be money that would be well invested and worthwhile to our football program. I want to make sure that they understand. What I'm trying to do is make the parents feel that their input is valuable. And it is. I'm not blowing smoke at them. It's very, very valuable. The contribution that they make, they can really enhance the football program as long as they're directed in the right way. And what they have to understand, and you have to be very diplomatic when you do this, you have to diplomatically let them know that their input is critical to the success of the program, that you couldn't live without it, but that you're the one who's in charge. The coach is in charge, and the coach directs where that program goes. If you do that, you can get parents, they'll do anything for you. And our parents here at Garner Valley have been phenomenal. To me, they set the gold standard for what booster clubs are all about. Ways to get positive parent input. We have Friday night dinners where the kids come. Parents cook the dinners. They serve the meals. We have a golf outing for a big fundraiser. Parents go around and get sponsors. They work the day of the golf outing. We have a football camp that I mentioned earlier. Our parents cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We sign up that night of the meeting. They get a chance to come over. They get a chance to be involved. And they're involved with something that's hands-on so that they're not places where they shouldn't be. During our football camp, we have a picture day where the kids dress up in their uniforms. It's when we make our roster. I invite all the families to come over, take pictures of their son, take picture of their son and their friends, take picture of the whole team, whatever. We have a little barbecue outside, and we have a fun day with that. The Outback has been fantastic to our football program over the last several years. We have a local Outback. They sponsor lunch at our golf outing, and they sponsor a dinner during the end of our football camp where all the families come. Every kid on our team, his immediate family, they come for this dinner. It's, again, a great chance for me to communicate, to thank them for coming, to get a chance to see the kids, to get an upfront look at the football program. We have a dinner for the senior parents through our booster club. Again, something somebody else can be in charge of the senior dinner. We distribute game programs through our booster club. We always are looking for water and Gatorade donations for the kid to drink during the game and after the game. We sell spiritware through our booster club. Somebody else is in charge of spiritware. We give oranges to the kids during games. We have parents who hold the chains during game. Here's a big one. And this, in order to do this, you really have to be organized, and you really have to do a good job. And if you do it, this is one of the biggest benefits of all. I always invite the parents to watch practice. I invite them to watch practice, and here's the key thing. I tell them that I never want them on the field. They can come and watch practice. They can come every night and watch practice, but they're not to come down on the field. If they need me or they need their son, unless it's an emergency, they can wait till after practice to do that. So what we typically have is a bunch of parents who sit up on the hill of our practice field and will watch practice. It's a great social time for them. I want them to see our practices are organized, they're efficient, there's constructive coaching going on all the time. There's really no excuse for the kid not to know what he's doing. And a lot of times what happens is a parent will see his son, hey, you know, Bill, what's going on down there? You're not doing this, you're not doing that. And there's a fine line there. We don't want parents being coaches, but at the same time, sometimes a little encouragement from the parent can go a long way and be helpful. One of the most important things that I've done over the last 20 years, and one of the things I think is most beneficial to our football program, is I have individual meetings with the parent and the player, every kid on my team. When I first started Garnet Valley in 1986, we were one of the smallest AA schools in the state of Pennsylvania. As a matter of fact, I think for a 10 or 12 year period, we were the smallest AA school in the state. About 10 years ago, we became the fastest growing school district in the state of Pennsylvania. So we went from having, in 1986, in 1992, we graduated 89 seniors. This year, in 2007, we graduated over 300 seniors. In a couple years, we'll be close to 400 kids that we'll have in our graduating class. What's that done for the football team is increase the number of players that we have on our team. This year, 10 through 12, we'll have probably 90 football players, and we'll have another 40 in our ninth grade program. Still, what I try and do during the offseason, I meet individually with every kid and his parents. I have one half-hour meetings. I do it on Monday nights in February, March, and April. I think this year it took me 8 or 9 nights, where I would start at 5 o'clock or 5:30, schedule half-hour meetings until 10 o'clock. Me, the kid, the parent. And what I was trying to do in this meeting is several things. One, it's a way for me to get to know the parents, and more importantly, for them to get to know me, rather than just that guy they see on the field, but a guy that they can talk to. Two, it's a way to clarify expectations and to have their son illuminate his experiences. This is really critical, because a lot of times, what the kid will say at home or what the parent will see at home is a lot different from what the coach sees on the field. When I'm there with the player, he can't tell his dad I'm the best quarterback on the team if he's the fifth string quarterback. He can't say that in front of me because he knows that I know that that's not true. And sometimes it's a real eye-opener for the parent to see his son do that. It clears up communication and makes sure we're all on the same page. And one of the things that I stress is that each meeting is 30 minutes. We don't go longer than 30 minutes. I send that home in a letter that they get. If they need more time to meet with me, I'm available at a different time. But in order to stay on schedule, 30 minutes tops. What else I try and do is I try and work the meeting so it's going to suit the purposes of me and of our football program and, of course, of the player who's involved in our football program. Now, I've been here for a long time, so my reputation has been around, and they kind of know what to expect, and I have younger brothers, and I even starting to have kids of players that I've coached. So the purpose of my meeting might be different than the purpose of a meeting of somebody who's just starting. You need to figure out what it is that you want to communicate to the parent and make sure you do that during this meeting. I always start off my meetings by saying to the player, Billy, you know, I want you to know that I see my role here as being somebody to help your parents, to work together with your parents, to put you in a position where you can be successful. Your mom and dad want more than anything to see you be successful. I want more than anything to see you be successful. But what it doesn't matter if you don't want to be successful. Because really, one of the things that we talk about, quote by Bob Love, if it is to be, it's up to me. And I throw that in there right now. If it is to be, it's up to me. It doesn't matter what your mom wants. It doesn't matter what your dad wants. It doesn't matter what I want. It matters what you want. And if you want to be successful, you have to work hard to do that. But I want you to know that your mom, dad, and I are all on the same page, and we want to do whatever we can to put you in that position. I emphasize at this meeting holding the kids accountable, holding the kids responsible. I want them to take responsibility for their homework. I want them to take responsibility for their behavior. I want them to take responsibility for everything that they do, for the decisions that they make. And I talk about that during the meeting. Again, I emphasize, I'm trying to put the players in a position where they can be successful, and I give them ideas of how they can do it. As a football player, they can be successful by getting to the weight room. As students, they can be successful by getting their homework done. We don't practice until 3:30. Get to see a teacher before practice. We went to a two-platoon system last year. Hey, how do you want to be successful? You want to pick an offensive position, pick a defensive position. Work hard at it. And I try and give them little tricks. Like I said before, I always, and I reiterate this here, once you become a Garner Valley football player, you represent not only yourself, but your teammates, your coaches, your school, and always your family. The behaviors that you have, the actions that you do, the decisions that you make, they don't just affect you. They affect all those people. And I want them to think about that, and I want to talk about that. At the meeting, my sample meeting agenda, I go over the history of the meetings. I say I've been doing this for a long time. I've seen a lot of kids come through the program who've been successful, who haven't been successful. I want to share with you some of the stories that I've had, some of the experiences that I've had, so you can learn from the experiences of others who've been here before you. I have a copy of the report card there and their transcript, and I go over that. I go over this whole idea that the better their grades are, the wider the variety of choices. And I always use this analogy. If you have a 4.0 grade point average, you get straight A's during your time here at Garner Valley, you're going to have all these options. You get a 3.0, straight B's, you still have a lot of options, but not as many as a 4.0. Straight C's, you still have some options, but not as many. D's and F's. The better your grades, the more choices you have, and the more chances you have to be successful. So one of the things that I talk about is what they have to do to get better grades. And I find most kids in high school don't know how to study. So I'm a high school English teacher. During this time, I go over how to study, what they do. And I take some time and go over an hour a night and some study guides things. And what I try and do here is I try and get the kid to admit that, yeah, he has an hour of time at night where he's not doing something he could spend with his time. I have the kid to identify getting better grades as one of his goals, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. When I get the kid to say that his goal is to get better grades and he's willing to put more time, and he says it in front of me and in front of his parents, and I say, well, then the next time your mom says, Billy, how come you're not studying? Your mom's not nagging you now. She's trying to help you make your goal. It changes the whole dynamics within the family setting. Now mom and dad are working to help Billy, not to antagonize Billy. And again, it's not always successful, but it really helps the kids to know, hey, my parents are trying to help me achieve that goal. When the kids come to the meeting, they need to bring with them goals, and they need to write down goals. And I talked to them before the meeting about how to write goals. They need three goals that are academic, three goals that are personal, and three goals for football. Most of this meeting is not about football. And I ask the kids to write down the goals, and I ask them to talk with their parents before the meeting about their goals and what they want to try to accomplish. I get a copy of their goals. They take a copy of their goals. I ask them to post the goals on their refrigerator at home so everybody can see it. One of the things with goal setting, if the goal becomes public, it makes it much more likely that somebody's going to attain it. But I want grandma, grandpa, aunts and uncles, friends, I want them to see the goals, and I want them to ask the kids about the goals. I take a copy of the goals. I put them up in our weight room so the coaches in the weight room that day can look through, check somebody's goals, and ask them how he is about accomplishing those goals. Real important part of our meeting. Talk about what they want to do in the future, what they have to do in order to get there, whether they want to become a doctor or a lawyer, they want to go to college, they don't want to go to college, what do we have to do to put them in a position where they can do that? We talk about the weight room, when the times are, and the critical part of the weight room as far as avoiding injury, building confidence, getting stronger. I heard a talk that Frank Cush gave one time. Frank Cush is a former college football coach. He was at Arizona. And one of the things that Frank Cush said that really stuck with me, he said every group of people is made up of three different kinds of people: winners, members, and joiners. He said most people in a group are members. Those are the people who are in the group on a football team, for instance. They're on the team. They come to practice every day. They go to the weight room. They do what they have to do. Yeah, they could probably put a little bit more effort in, but they're with the program. They're part of the program. They're good people. They're hard workers. They could work harder, but they're pretty good. That's the basis of what most of the team is. The winners and the joiners are the few number of guys. The winners, let's start with them, they're the guys who you can point at, and they do everything right. Whether it's going through a drill of practice, whether it's going through warm-up, whether it's going through the weight room, whatever it is that they do 100 miles an hour. They do it to the best of their ability. They do it on the field. They do it in the classroom. They do it in the hallways. They do it on the weekends. Whatever they do it right. And every team has somebody like that. Every group has somebody like that. Those are the winners. The joiners are the other end of the spectrum. They're guys who are on the team just because they want to be part of the team. They don't really want to make the commitment. They find excuses to not get stuff done. Those are the joiners. And I ask every kid to identify in those three areas, academically, personally, football-wise. Are you a winner, a member, or a joiner? Once the players identify whether they're winners, members, and joiners in each of those areas, we talk about it. If I have a kid who, academically, let's say, he's doing well, his marking period grade's an 85, but his midterm and final exams are 60s. What that tells me is, he's doing his work during the course of the semester pretty well, but when it comes time to study for a big test, he's not putting the time in. If I have a kid there who identifies himself as a winner, and he clearly is not putting in winner time or doing the winner things, it's a perfect opportunity to say, well, you know, how did you study for that exam? You told me before that you didn't study for the exam because you thought it was too big of a test. That's not the way a winner would do that. I would say maybe during the course of the semester, you're probably a member, and maybe even leaning toward a joiner as it comes time to prepare for exams. So overall, what do we want to come to? And generally, we decide on a member position. But I want to make sure that I talk about that with the player and with the parent. If you have a parent who thinks his kid should be playing a lot more, and that kid comes into that meeting and in front of you as with his football, identifies himself as a joiner or possibly a member, that's a real eye-opener for the dad who thinks his kid is going to be a scholarship kid, and he's really a fourth-string tackle on the JV team. Because a lot of times parents don't know that. But when you sit there in that meeting and the kid's goal as a football player is to, by his senior year, be a member of the special teams, and his dad's goal is for him to win a full scholarship to the University of Southern California, you have two different things. But the dad, when he sees his son in front of you, say, my goal is to be part of special teams, that changes his whole expectation that he has for his son, hopefully, in a positive way. And he can see, and I always point out the positives. Hey, he's working hard in the weight room. He's becoming the best player he can be, and we want to talk about that. So the winners, members, and joiners is a great way to get you, parent, and the player all on the same page. What I do after that is I ask for any questions or concerns, any problems that they have at the football program. Another thing that I think is key to these meetings. A lot of times when I go to games and I'm scouting, I hear players in the stands complain about the coach. He doesn't know what he's doing. Doesn't like this about the program. He doesn't like that about the program. I give him a flat-out chance right there face-to-face with me. What kind of problem? Do you have any problems with me? Do you have any problem with any assistant coaches? Do you have any problem with the program? Anything that you think that we need to do better, that you think we're not doing as well as we say we are, I need feedback. I need input. And I'm not looking for compliments here. I'm looking for problems or questions that people have. My feeling is, even if somebody doesn't have the courage to say something to you during that meeting, Next fall, when we're out there in the field and somebody starts to complain, another parent who went to the same meeting can say, hey, you had a chance to talk to Coach Ricky at the meeting. Why are you bringing it up here? Why not bring it up there? Or communicate. That's what he asked you to do. You know, boom. And we've eliminated a lot of potential problems in the stands by having this meeting, having the opportunity for people to do that. I also give them papers, important dates. When does camp start? When does practice start? When are physicals due? I give them a form for the physical so that they have that. All those different things get taken care of at this meeting. I always put little quotes on there. If it is to be, it's up to me, by Bob Love. I'll take something from Lou Holtz, put it on there. Something about team or something about selflessness, something about work ethic, whatever I can find that's going to help get across the message. I always end the meeting with the opportunities for parents to ask questions. Like I said, what I'm trying to do is put parents in a position, okay, where they have no choice but to support the football program and to support their son. While they wait out in the hallway, another thing, and I have some of this available at the end of the DVD, hopefully, is I give them something to read, something that reiterates the message. It's another way for me to communicate something when they come into the meeting in a positive way. Maybe about work ethic, maybe a story that I've read off the internet or in a book, what it takes to be successful, something short, sweet, to the point, but something that kind of sets the tone for the meeting when they come in. Other ways to get parents involved. You know, I'm talking about how we can positively get parents involved. One of the things that has been tremendously successful is I have a father's night. One night during the course of our season, one of our Friday night home games, I invite all the dads, or if there is no dad, a grandparent or an uncle or a significant male in the kid's life, to a father's night. And at the father's night, what I do is I invite them all and I give them their son's opposite color jerseys. We wear our maroon jerseys at home. They wear their son's white jersey. They sit in the bleachers and we do a walkthrough before every game. As the kids are out there in the walkthrough, the dads are up in the bleachers and they're getting kind of a behind-the-scenes look at Garden Valley football. They get to watch the players, they get to watch the checks that we make, they get to see all that. When the kids get done and go downstairs to get dressed, I then do a chalk talk with them. I bring the blackboard over, I go over the whole game plan with them. Offense, defense, special teams, what we expect from our opponent, how we plan to combat that, and what we plan to do and how we plan to do it. I go real in depth, I ask questions, I give them the opportunity to ask questions, and I really want them to feel like they're getting the inside scoop on what's happening. Then we feed them dinner. Real positive way. We have usually 100% of the parents who participate unless somebody's out of town. The kids love it because they get a chance to show off a little bit about what they know. The dads like it because they like to throw terminology around and act like they know what's going on. What they walk away from is realizing that high school football is way over most of their heads and they have no idea what's going on, which is another part of my purpose with having this meeting. I want them to know that the coaches we have here are outstanding. I have an outstanding group of assistant coaches. They do a fantastic job of preparing the kids to play football. And again, back to the parent role, support their son, do whatever he can to help make the football team better. Another thing that I do is I have a little seminar. Any kid who wants to play in college or any kid who thinks he's good enough to play in college, I bring them in. I bring them and their parents in. I explain to them at that seminar what the difference is between Division I football, Division II, Division III, Division I AA, what levels give scholarships, what don't give scholarships, what you have to do to get a scholarship, the unlikelihood of somebody receiving a scholarship. It's a very difficult thing to do. We talk about financial aid. A lot of times I'll bring a guidance counselor into that meeting and talk about those different things. Education. The purpose is to educate parents. I don't want a parent thinking, oh, my son's going to go play at Penn State when he's not good enough to play at a Division III school. I want them to know how competitive Division III football, how good Division III football is. And I want them to realize that there's a lot of kids that play football, not just kids here at Garner Valley. I'll call different coaches from different levels and I'll talk to them. I'll talk to Bill Zwan from Westchester. I'll talk to Scott Dapp from Moravian College. I'll talk to Bill Manlove, who used to be at Widener University. I'll talk to Mark D'Onofrio from Temple. I'll talk to somebody from Penn State. And I'll ask those guys, what do you look for? What kind of things can I tell these parents? What's the body type? What's the size and speed by position? What are the grades? What are the SATs? What do they have to do to fit this mold? Because I want the parents, I want the players to know what's out there and what that means. One of the things that we really have a lot of fun with, I call it Cats and Dogs Night. We're the Garner Valley Jaguars, so we're the cats. BYC is our local youth football team. They're the dogs. We have a cats and dogs night in August where I invite the entire youth program, from the 5-year-old flag football kids up to the 120-pound 12-year-old kids, and they come and they practice on our field with us. We go through a pre-practice stretch together. We go through some individual drills together, and then they run their offense, and we act as a defense all over the field, and they knock us down, and our kids laugh, and we have a blast. It's one of the most fun nights of the year. Our kids love it, the big kids. The little kids love it. They get a chance to be on the game field. It's a chance for me to talk to the parents of the future, to set the tone, to make them look forward to coming and becoming part of our football program. Really a special night. And then I follow that up by going and speaking at the youth club banquets. I speak at several youth club banquets during the course of the year, and what I try and promote there is that football is fun and the positive experiences you can get from playing football. And I try and talk to the youth league coaches who are there, and I try and get them to understand that point. Hey, you need to treat every kid like he's your own. That football needs to be fun. It's developmental. We don't treat the best kids any better than the kids who aren't very good football players. One of the highlights for the parents is at the end of each year, I have the seniors address the underclassmen. We have one practice. It's usually our last practice of the year. After practice, we go into the library, and I give each senior a chance to address the underclassmen. During that time, I ask them to talk about what they've learned during their time playing football at Garnet Valley, what advice they want to pass on, what experiences that they've had. And it generally turns into a very emotional night. The kids are usually very honest, and I don't give them any insight as to what I want them to say. I just want them to be honest. They do a great job. They realize their time is playing football in high school is coming to a close. Like I said, very emotional. I videotape that, and then I bring it and show it to the parents at the booster club. The next booster club meeting, we have to go to a bigger room because so many parents come. They want to hear what the kids have to say. And what it does is it promotes the program. They hear all the positives. Every once in a while you get a kid that has some negative stuff to say in there. But the positives far outweigh the negative. And a lot of times it's a perspective changer for some of the parents. You know, every group has obstinate parents, difficult parents. Sometimes those parents are the ones who, man, by the time they get to this meeting, they realize, you know what, my son really had a good experience while I was here. He really gained a lot. And that's what we're trying to do. So I use every opportunity I can to get across and to communicate my message. We have a banquet book that we put together. I write a letter in there. There's a sample of that at the end of the DVD. My banquet speech, again, to communicate the message. What are we trying to get across? To reflect on the positive things that we as a team did, the things that I think the kids learned during the course of the season, whether it be dealing with adversity, learning how to be a good teammate, whatever. Our awards at the banquet are designed to reflect what we try and teach. We don't have a most valuable player. We don't have a best offense or best defensive player. Our awards are to recognize what we want the kids to do. We have a preseason workout award, which is very self-explanatory. We have a scholar athlete award for the player who gets the most of his ability athletically and academically. Not to the best player, not to the best student. Who gets the most of his ability in the classroom and on the football field? We have an altruism award for the player who kind of selflessly does things for other people without looking to be recognized or looking to be noticed. We have a coach's award to recognize the player who is completely selfless, who does whatever he can for the team regardless. We had a kid 1 year, we moved from quarterback to center. Didn't even blink an eye. That's who you need me to do, coach. That's what I'll do. Those are the kinds of guys that we try and recognize with the coach's award. We have a Jaguar award where the players on the team vote for and identify the player who they think best represents the ideals of what a Garnet Valley football player should be, on and off the field. To me, it's our biggest award. It's the last award we give. But the awards that we design and the awards that we give are designed so as to reflect what we're trying to teach during our program. We recognize every player at our banquet. You know, we have to be very organized and very efficient in order to do that. I talk about each player in the program. When you have close to 100 players, that can be a long night, but I really get it down to about 30 seconds per kid, so we move through quickly. And again, I try to be real honest and real sincere during that time and point out the things. Maybe it's as a player, maybe it's as a person, maybe it's a person and a player. I go to the ninth grade banquet. I try and speak at the ninth grade banquet. I want to make sure that the ninth grade coaches are reiterating the same message. If you're a middle school coach or you're a youth league coach or you're a ninth grade coach or a JV coach, talk to your head coach. Find out, what does he want you to convey at your banquet? You need to reinforce the message. Again, it's for the benefit of the kids who are in the program if they're hearing a consistent message all the way through. I have a meeting with the ninth grade players and their parents. When they get in 10th grade, I meet with them individually. As ninth graders, I meet with the whole group of them. In our game program every week, I write a section called Coach's Corner. Again, there's one available at the end of this DVD. Communicate my message. Talk about what's happening with the team. Talk about what's coming up for the week. Get a chance for the people who come to the game to read about it and know what's going on a little bit. I put on our letterheads, our t-shirt in the weight room, our slogans. If it is to be, it's up to me. Another big one we have is do what you're supposed to do. Another one we have is oneness. That's in our weight room. It's on our t-shirts. It's on our letterhead. It's in our locker room. Kids see the same message. The parents see the same message all the time. That's going to end my time here with this DVD of getting parents on your side, my guide to developing a positive relationship with your parents. I think it's a critical thing that you establish a need or in a way and a means for the parents to get involved in the program. I think you're foolish if you're not giving them an opportunity as to how they can do that so that they can feel like they belong and be a positive contributor to the program. As the coach, you can eliminate, I think, a lot of problems by embracing the parents, by putting them in a position where they can do good things. If you ever need to call me, and again, I'm no expert, this is just what's worked for me, or get in contact with me, my email at Garnet Valley is RickyM, R-I-C-C-I-M, at GarnetValleySchools, that's plural, .com. RickyM at GarnetValleySchools.com. Thanks for listening.